It's great to be with you today, and you know, at my age, I'm just pleased to be anywhere. See, I'm ancient history. I grew up with this fescue toxicity thing, and worked with it throughout the history of that, and I think I know something about it. And some people say, well, Carl, you know too much history. And I say, yeah, I probably do. But, you know, when we forget our history, we often get lost. And that occurs with a lot of things. So I'm going to deal with this thing today, telling you a little bit about the beginnings of this fescue problem, and then continue on as to what has happened in terms of solutions to it and some practical ones, and where we are today in terms of what we might be able to do about it from the plant standpoint. Because I don't profess to be able to solve the animal problems as such through the animal. That's up to you folks. And I understand you're going to have some exciting new research going on in this area, and I think that's certainly overdue. Certainly it's one area that needs to be pursued. So, I will begin now. Oops. That should be. There we are. Now, this update that I have is based on one thing. Tall fescue, a grass. The most important cool season forage grass, pasture grass in the United States. Covering a large geographic area. Now, it's a relatively new grass in terms of coverage of the United States. Prior to the 1940s, it was virtually unknown. It's hard to imagine much of the eastern United States, southern United States, without tall fescue. It's hard to conceive. There was no cool season perennial grass that persisted in this region. Winter was brown. It's hard to imagine. So I can imagine what livestock suffered. And then in eastern Kentucky, a professor from the University of Kentucky was brought there, and he noted to see this pasture on this hillside, and it had green grass in the winter. And it had been there for many years, dating back probably to the 1880s, grass seed that probably came as a contaminant and seed from Europe. That's the only thing that probably happened. Anyway, this professor, Dr. Ian Fergus, looked at this, he got seed, he brought it back to the University of Kentucky here at Lexington, and he worked on it to look at its potential and found out that this was a great grass. And he released a variety in 1943, which was aptly named Kentucky 31 Tall Fescue. This became a wonder grass. Seed was precious and expensive, and it spread like wildfire over the whole southern region and into the Midwest. And that grass has covered up a lot of area of the United States today. And so this grass then, if you look at this, it looks like it covers up the whole eastern United States. This author, this person that made this map up, got a little generous with his facts. But it does cover a lot of area. And I guess he was enthralled with fescue, I'm not sure. But anyway, it does cover some of our major livestock area. And certainly we've got well over a third of our beef cattle in the United States, probably closer to half of the beef cattle in the United States, that are maintained to a large extent on tall fescue. Well, what's so wonderful about this grass? Well, there are a number of wonderful things. It's easy to establish from seed. It's a long grazing season. It tolerates drought. It tolerates acid soils, and it tolerates hard grazing. It also has a fair amount of pest resistance, nematodes and other pests, insects as well. All this makes it very appealing. And if you ask a lot of cow-calf producers today about tall fescue, they say, I like it. It's a good grass. And it's been thought that for a long time. Now, what's wrong? Well, the problem is that cattle just don't do very well on it. That's the only thing that's wrong with it. Well, you can't expect everything, folks. And I'm sure many of you in this room have seen cattle like this. They go by the name of fescue cattle. And they don't make a lot of money. They lose a lot of money for folks. And that's the root of the problem here. Now, fescue toxicosis problems. At first, it was sort of muddled up. We didn't really know what all went on. But there basically are three syndromes that you have. The first one is fescue foot. Now, fescue foot is one where you see the hooves of the animals are getting sore and the hocks, and then finally they start bleeding, the hooves finally fall off, and the animal can't walk, and tails fall off, the tips of ears fall off, and it doesn't look very nice. And of course, you lose the animals. Now, this syndrome is, this thing is found basically only in colder areas of the fescue belt, and certainly more in winter. You rarely see this in the lower part of the fescue belt, where it is not so cold. So it is one that is more winter-oriented. The second one is bovine fat necrosis, much less important. Bovine fat necrosis is simply where you have an accumulation of hard fat along the digestive tract and along the reproductive tract of the female animal. And this, of course, affects digestion by the animal, and it does affect birthing. The cause of this seems to be associated largely with high rates of nitrogen fertilization. Primarily, you'll see it in areas where they apply a lot of broiler litter, chicken litter, turkey litter, and so on, where they get high rates of nitrogen. Because most folks don't put that much nitrogen on their tall fescue pastures. They don't get that problem. In fact, some people don't put any on it. Because we've gotten short some in Georgia like that. Now, the third syndrome is fescue toxicity, also known as summer syndrome, summer slump, because the symptoms are worse in the summer, but they occur all year on fescue. This is by far the most important of these three, and it occurs all over the fescue belt. It's everywhere. And that's the one primarily we're going to talk about here. Okay. If you look at these animals, on the front is an animal that has the typical symptoms that you'll see in bad cases of this. In the back is an animal maintained on tall fescue without this toxicity problem. And the animals, you see they're not shedding their hair coat in the spring. They are thin, poor condition, salivating usually, and they cannot tolerate heat. And I'm not talking about extreme heat now. I'm talking about even temperatures of 70 degrees, 75. They will hit for the shade and they'll stay there. They drink large amounts of water, they urinate heavily, and they usually have mud on them quite commonly from lying in this duct. Okay. Why? What causes this stuff? Now, this is a problem that's been with us for quite a while. And no one really knew. Now, there was a lot of research that was done And for about 30 years, there was a lot of money poured into research, all sorts. They had all kinds of ideas on, there were diseases they thought were caused it. There were chemicals within the plant they thought caused it. And tremendous amount of work went on. And it all amounted to nothing. Very discouraging, very discouraging. And then there was finally a scientist, a toxicologist at the Russell Research Center of the USDA in Athens, Georgia, a guy by the name of Joe Robbins, a very practical sort of fellow. And he had observed on a farm in central Georgia a one cattle operation there where cows on one pasture had typical fescue symptoms. They looked terrible. And then another pasture on that same farm close by, fescue alone, and cattle were in excellent condition. Well, all right. And the cattle that were there maintained their good appearance. So he says, I think some of the work I've been doing on a fungus may be the cause. So he sampled them and brought it back to the laboratory, and they examined under the microscope, and sure enough, they found out there were some fungi in the plant that were there. And he said, I think that may be the cause. They're probably producing some alkaloids because they're sort of like ergot, alkaloids. He didn't know. So this then was what these fungi look like, a hyphae between the cell walls, and you get plant here that is providing a home for them. Now, if you look in terms of the fungal endophytes, this thing was published by Bacon and Robbins back in 1977. That was the first indication that this might be the cause, possible, not proof, which was established later. We established this in Alabama in controlled grazing trials. And a lot of people didn't believe it. One scientist told us, a very distinguished scientist, said, Carl, I just cannot believe that this is the cause. I said, why not? Because if it had been this simple, a little fungus in there that caused it, with all the money we spent on research, we'd have found this long ago. Well, sometimes things don't work out right. Anyway, we get vasoconstriction with this, decreased blood flow to the peripheral tissues, and it is indeed caused by an alkaloid or more than one alkaloid. The ergovaline, finally, was assumed to be the alkaloid responsible. Well, there's some evidence now, certainly it indicates that may or may not be true. Since ergovaline transport across the ruminal gastric tissue is low as compared to the lysergic acid and lysergol, which do pass through, then ergovaline is not likely to be a causal agent. Hill at Georgia has published several papers on this, and I think there's some, he's on the right track here, that this may not be. We don't know at this point exactly what is causing it. All we know is we got problems. Now, just to review a little bit about the beef cattle response to the endophyte. Let's take beef steers first. If we look at beef steers, when you put them on non-toxic fescue, you get excellent growth. I mean, we get 2 pounds a day or more on this. Easy. With the toxic fescue, we're down low, and the animals don't look very good. So, to sum up on beef steers and heifers, again, the same old stuff, failure to shed hair coats, intolerance to heat, And gains are generally reduced, if you look at the literature, and this is in the paper, 30 to over 50% of reduced intake. It really goes down. You know, one cattleman told me one reason. I like fescue because I can carry more cows on toxic fescue than I can that other stuff. He's right. No doubt about it. So I guess that's one way to look at it. You have to be positive on this thing. And post-grazing, feedlot performance. Now that's pretty much, we've assumed, I think, that they're going to have recovery in here, in the feedlot, and compensatory gains. And that certainly is true in a number of trials that have been done. But actually, there are several others that say, no, that's not true. We've gotten none. In fact, I've been involved in some of that, and we haven't gotten it. Now, why is there a difference? I don't know the answer to that, except that these trials have been done at different times of the year. And that might be a factor, whether these animals are going into the feedlot in summer or whether they're going in during the cool season of the year. I don't know the answer to that. But it may well be that if they're going in, say, in the summertime, into the feedlot, and you don't get any recovery here, that it might pay to give a better price to buy calves have been grazed on and backgrounded on non-toxic fescue. Just to point out a little bit here, endophyte free versus endophyte infected fescue, the spring and autumn average daily gain, of course, in the spring, you've got usually average daily gains on steers of a pound a day or less, usually less. And 2 pounds a day or better. Autumn, the difference is not as great. The total gain per steer, again, a big difference. And then again, when you go up to gain per acre, here again, you double your gain per acre. So I think if you're going with steers, there is no question that toxic fescue is not the way to go. However, we've got some stocker operators in North Georgia that have been using toxic fescue and feeding lots of corn. I don't quite see the economics of it, but anyway, it's being done. Brood cows and calves. This is an old picture. Took this on an early study we did when I was at Auburn University. And this is at your black belt experiment station. And these animals are in rough shape. And it's not uncommon to see cows like this. So what happens to them? Well, they're thin and poor condition. And you see them often caked with mud because they lie in muddy areas because of the high urine output. Winter hair coats, again, failing to shed. Now, pregnancy rate reduced 40 to 60%. Can we afford that kind of a loss? I don't think so. Reduced milk production. Calf birth weights reduced. And calf weaning weights decreased 40 to 70 pounds. Now, that's pretty impressive. Okay. Now, we got the problem. Now, if we're going to solve this, get some solutions, we need to know something about how this endophyte works. And I think this is the problem area we didn't know anything about for a long time. We were ignorant, and it showed, too, in what we were trying to solve. First, this thing lives its entire life cycle within the tall fescue plant. And it is not visible externally on plant. You know, we've had more problems with that with some cattlemen and people. Well, I can't see anything out there. No, you can't. It lives inside the plant. And it's not typical for a disease organism. And it is spread only through infected seed. This is another one. People say, well, does it move plant to plant? And I say, no, it doesn't. But when I have a pasture, and we check it, will increase in percentage of endophyte over the years. You're right, it does. And the reason it does that is if you've got a mixed population of toxic and non-toxic fescue plants in there, over time, when you graze it hard, the toxic plants are going to overcome the endophyte-free plants, and they will dominate, and pretty soon that will be the overwhelming number of plants out there.